Woof. That wasn't great. Nuggets drop a tough one to the Cavaliers. Plus, a look ahead to the Jazz with the host of Locked On Jazz. This is Locked On Nuggets.
You are Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Nuggets. I'm your host, Matt Moore, senior NBA writer for the Action Network and Nuggets insider for 104.3 The Fan in Denver. He is Adam Mares, head of content for DNVR. You can check him out at thednvr.com and at the DNVR bar every game night for your Denver Nuggets. On today's show, we'll recap what was a disgusting, annoying, in the minds of the Nuggets players, lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers on Monday night in the first half of the back-to-back. We'll get into all of that, all of the mess that is the Nuggets offense and the bench and MPJ and like the whole stuff. We'll try and breeze through those in two segments. In the third segment, Adam did himself a little dishing with our esteemed colleague and, boss of Locked On, David Locke from Locked On Jazz. We'll have that for you in the third segment to preview the big back-to-back battle out in Salt Lake between the Nuggets and the Jazz on Tuesday night. Adam, first, I don't ever start this way, and I should do it more often. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. I mean, it's a Monday. This feels more like a Monday after a long weekend than anything, but ready to talk about the Nuggets looking rough.
Thanks for making Locked On Nuggets your first listen each and every day. We're free and available on all platforms. Do want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. All right, Adam. So in this disgusting game, 99-87, got him under. And yet the Nuggets lose. The bright spot in this pretty terrible loss, in which no one played well, I thought was the defense, which once again had a really stellar number, particularly in the half court. And then I suggested that Nikola Jokic spat on it and was like, no, I actually think the defense hasn't been good at all. They had 99 points, but it was all very easy for them. And I was like, oh, okay. So you literally did nothing right tonight. That's our big takeaway here.
I do. I agree with Nikola on this one. I don't think there was really a whole lot of positives from this one. You know, it's one game. It's a Monday game. It's the Cavs. Yeah. The Nuggets have had this MO for really in the entire Jokic Malone era. But I don't know that there's a ton of silver linings if you look at just this game alone.
Yeah. So here's what's funny is this happens with a lot of teams, right? Like I watch all these teams fans on Twitter because I am sick in the head. And one of the things that I think is always interesting is just there's always has to be like these broad, like, everyone, like it's,
what does it mean?
Yeah. What does it mean? And it's always like something's got to change. No, nothing has to change. The Nuggets have been a 50-win team for 3 years, made the Western Conference Finals, been in the playoffs every single year. They're going to be fine. Like, here's the reality. They're not playing well right now. No one played well tonight, and no one shot well tonight, and they turned the ball over a lot, and the Cavaliers got great performances from their front court, and that's it. Like that's like what it comes down to is like the Nuggets just.
I think there's more to that. I mean, I'm with you in that like the sweeping like oh there's a flaw to this team or whatever, but you know the NBA basketball is a process. It's an 82 game process. There's ebbs and flows. There's peaks and valleys. I think that three games in, there are a couple of different trends that you can now see. And this was one where Jokic Jokic's numbers were incredible tonight, but I don't think he had a phenomenal night. This was a night where he couldn't save him. But the trends are, you know, obviously one, Porter just looking very fragmented off from what the team is trying to do on offense. And more importantly, or maybe adjacent to, is the fact that Denver is turning the ball over at a pretty ridiculous rate right now. And that was a big storyline tonight. Right. So was it a thing of, hey, just tonight wasn't their night? Probably. I mean, that probably has a lot to do with it. But the turnover trend is one that you look at and go, okay, this is three games now. Kind of been a thing. Something's going on.
So what I'm trying to say here is not like, it's totally fine, just throw it out. I don't think this is one of those. It's not a schedule loss. I think what I'm more trying to say is like, sometimes the team just plays badly. Yeah. And this is early in the season when they're still trying to figure stuff out and they play badly. Like I just try and stay away from, you know, a sweeping condemnation, because a lot of this is, if they win, most fans don't care. Like, you and I will dig into it and be like, look, they won.
Right.
Like, these are issues. Like, if they won this game tonight, let's say that they shoot 55% from three and they win this game because they, like, well, they played.
No, don't even go that. If they had a run going in that fourth quarter that never really took off, but if they would have just, like, continued it and won after three quarters of terrible basketball and then Jokic takes over or something, like, there's still stuff to analyze and be like, hey, that wasn't a good win. That was a bad win.
They're still saying, like, no, there's issues here. Like, the turnovers have been a problem. So Jokic took like four questions about the turnovers. And
Betty loved that.
Yeah, stellar. Really enjoyed it as much as he enjoyed when I asked him. I was like, hey, are the back-to-backs easier in the beginning of the season? He was like, I don't know, man. I don't know, brother. It's just a game. And I was like, cool. Like, he asked these questions, and I did think his answers were revealing in some aspects. He mentioned several times guys not taking shots, which was a problem. They were trying to get the ball popping tonight, and one, they were not playing with enough energy to get the ball popping, and two, they just overpassed, and they overpassed into turnovers. And so, some of it was like, look, Aaron Gordon dribbles on the baseline and dribbles out of bounds. Okay.
Yeah, there were a couple, yeah.
They had a lot of offensive turnovers on Jamichael Green's screens. Like, it's just his screens were bad, right? His screens were bad tonight. It was a mix of technique and decision making, but the fact that it wasn't just technique. Like, if you have a night where you're just like, we just couldn't dribble the ball straight. Like, we're professional basketball players and we were just throwing the ball to nothing. And like, Barton had one where like he lofted the ball way out of bounds and like it was just a terrible pass, right? They have all these things, but then they also had the decision-making problem. So they gave up 32. Here's what's crazy. So let me ask you this. They had 32 points off of turnovers, Cavaliers did. Okay. Which that's averaging more than a point per possession, well over it. That's really bad. That's terrible. They only had 8 fast break points. So really what you're looking at here is, yes, you're creating turnovers, and yes, some of those are live ball situations, but it's really a matter of you're not getting matched up right, and that's causing breakdowns because you're scrambled, or it's just like a, you know, if you score in the ensuing possession after an offensive turnover on an illegal screen, right, that counts. They'll log that as a points off turnover, and it's like a half court failure.
I think what it really was today, at least from watching it, it felt like an annoying game to play in. I think everybody was a little annoyed. And
yeah, it was felt that way in the arena, man. It felt like, sorry to cut you off, but like Jokic had one, like there was one of those. There was this really
– body language wasn't great from Jok today.
No, it was – and you could tell that he was just – this was the whole expression that I felt like it was from Jokic. He was acting like, oh, can anything go right?
And but not even can anything go right. Anything go right is like acts of nature. You know, this one was more of like, what the hell is wrong with all of you people? Kind of almost in a lot of ways.
No, because I think he was blaming himself too.
Like, yeah,
I think
for sure. He had some really bad ones.
Yeah, he whipped a pass that got turned, that guy
two. Both of them by Markkanen to the corner that were, I think, both to MPJ. And again, maybe some of that is more of like, I'm trying to get MPJ the ball, so I'm going to force a call. I mean, like, we talk about that pass in the Spurs game. It was to Michael Porter. He wasn't open. Jokic made something out of nothing with an incredible pass. And I wonder if there's a little bit of a, I'm trying to get you the ball. And like, sometimes to get you the ball, I have to like throw in insane passes to get you, you know, to force feed it. I'm curious your thought on this take. And it goes to Will Barton's comments after the game. Monte Morris hasn't been great to start the season for whatever reason. I think he's off to a little bit of a slow start. I mean, tonight, only four shots he got up. I think Denver's suffering a bit from a lack of point guard play. And Will Barton talked about this today of, I need to be a better facilitator and I need to take on that role. And I actually agree with him. I actually do think, well, the team has looked their best in stretches when Will Barton has sort of been the de facto point guard. And I wonder if that's part of what we're seeing with, one, Michael Porter not getting involved more, and two, games like the last two where the offense have been stuck in the mud, other than Jokic being a miracle worker. I wonder if they're just lacking that point guard play.
Let's get into that question. Let's ask the question of if they need to get a point guard, better point guard play, and who can provide that. We'll do that after the break. See that tease? See that tease I got in there?
There you go.
We'll do that after the break. But first, I do need to tell you that today's episode is brought to you by DirecTV Stream, because it is the absolute best way for you to get your TV together. No more of juggling all these different remotes. I hate that, by the way. Like, I'll be like, here's a remote. Nope, that's not the one I need. Nope, I'll tell my kids, like, hey, bring me the remote. And they bring me the wrong one like four times. I hate that. No more DirecTV. You're going to get all together without the hassle. It brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. You don't need to buy another device ever again. That's tempting. And the best part, no annual contract. It's huge. Get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device required. Content varies by package. We'll be right back. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for making this part of your day. Thanks for making us your first listen each and every day. We're free and available on all platforms. So you asked a question about, you know, point guard play and Will Barton's assessment, and you obviously are in that mindset, and I am too. I will tell you that of all the available options right now, if you were to ask me what I, basketball plebe, thinks that they should do, I would say that the best option for them is I think they should start Will Barton at point guard and play PJ Dozier at combo guard. That has shooting, defense, athleticism. You can get downhill. It adds more speed to the starting unit. It's a little bit better defender on the edge. You would then have two good defenders in Aaron Gordon and PJ Dozier to cover up for the rest of the unit. And it puts Will Barton in a playmaking mode, which Barton did say he needed to get more assists. So that is my assessment on what they need. I don't think you can play Monte and Faku on the second unit, so I think that Faku needs to be out of the rotation. You move Bones Highland in, you move Austin Rivers out, and you're playing basically a nine-man rotation with Morris, Bones, Dos Verdes, and...
Yep, and that's it. That's it. Then your starting group that had Dozier. That's certainly a solution. I love it. I mean, I like Barton and Dozier because they're both 6'7 and long and athletic, mm-hmm. I've been on this where... If you give Michael Porter and Jokic two great defenders, you're going to have a pretty solid defense. So I like it. I don't think that's where Denver's going to go. I think that's a drastic change. I would more look to it as could Malone get there after 5 minutes? Malone's been playing those starters a lot of minutes. I mean, seven, 8 minutes, they're playing straight and each to start each half. And maybe you shorten that and stagger a little bit earlier and get to that, because I would like to see that lineup. I think the easiest solution that's most likely to happen is that Monte Morris gets going. I mean, this has just been a really slow start for him. He had a tough offseason. We knew that. His body, I think, looked a little puffy coming into the season. He doesn't look particularly quick. He's not living in the paint in ways that we've seen. And honestly, Denver's not getting him in the pick and roll a whole lot. I think they know that he's a little bit, you know, off to a slow start or what have you. So I think that the easiest solution is for Monte to be playing better. 27 minutes and only 4 field goal attempts, you know, only 2 points. Pretty surprising and really low production from a guy who's usually pretty consistent.
I still feel like one of the issues is that he's the second youngest player on that starting five outside of MPJ. And he makes considerably less money than all the rest of those guys on the starting unit. I think it's difficult for the player in that position to be like, hey, let's get organized. They need somebody that's just going to like...
That's an interesting comment. Although he does make good money. Remember, Barton, or he has a weird contract this year.
He makes good money, but he doesn't make...
The money part could be interesting, but I think it has more to do with just the clout. Like, look, nobody's...
Yeah.
He's clearly the fifth best player.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, he's the backup point guard. And like he wanted to be a backup point guard for like 10 years. Morris will be a great backup point guard in this league forever.
Yeah.
And it's not that he can't start. He's done it capably for a team that's won games and won playoff series. But what I'm saying is, I think it's difficult if the offense is having trouble getting organized. He can't be that voice.
Yeah.
And I think Will is probably the best candidate to do it. Like,
interesting.
Just is. Yeah. He's the oldest. He's the most
experienced. You might be right about this. You might be right about that. I mean, yeah. I'd be very curious to see him running pure point, like true point.
Yeah. With you in mind, you were in my head. I asked Michael Malone this question. I said, you know, typically speaking, you've said that you feel like the offense will take care of itself. Given where things are at, are you concerned with the offense? And, you know, he said, yeah. Like, he said that he's definitely concerned about the offense. You know, it's funny, like, he actually didn't complain about the defense. You know, like that's a very easy thing. Like, well, it wasn't. I don't think he minded that much. I will also say that while I think there's like a middle ground here on the defense, where it's like the Cavs shot badly, they got a bunch of inside shots that were easy. I thought Aaron Gordon, for as horrible as he was offensively, and everyone was horrible offensively, Aaron Gordon had some amazing defensive plays in it. He had some like some transition plays and at the rim verticality. Like Aaron Gordon gave a lot of, like there was a lot of, that was the thing. I don't necessarily know that tonight was a lack of effort on terms of like the body. Like Malone said that offensively they're moving lethargic. I agree with that on offense. And so like this does get into the question of like, all right, are they spending too much energy on defense? You and I've talked about this before.
That's interesting. I don't know that I think that's what's happening. I think the connection is bad right now. Yeah. That's because kind of how I feel. I mean, that's the word George Karl always uses. You could feel a connection with a team. The team is connected. I don't feel like they're very connected right now. And it's kind of weighing on them.
You know who's not connected?
Who's that?
It's Michael Porter Jr. He is not connected.
I mean, but that's really at the heart of all of this. And yeah. Like, look, we've seen Michael Porter and Jokic look better than what they have to start the season. Like, they looked very good over the last 15 games last year. Yeah. But why is it gone? You know, why are they having a bit of a hard time finding that? And let's be honest, Michael Porter just has not looked like himself. He's not looked like what we anticipated he would look like. I mean, yeah. Michael Porter's a great scorer. He's not even getting shot attempts right now. And to me, that's coloring everything that's happening on the court, is there's almost this like anxiety hanging over everything right now about that dynamic.
I will say, like, he got 14 shots tonight, one fewer than Jokic.
Yeah, but a lot of four or five of those came in the last like 3 minutes where he was just firing them up to, I mean, the game was over, trying to get quick threes.
Well, I got a couple of points on Porter I want to make real quick. One, got yanked at the end of the second half and he's steaming, right?
It's a big deal. It's surprising it took us this long to get to that. That was a big deal.
And so people on Twitter actually hit me up and were like, well, you know, he did have two fouls. So I asked,
right.
No, I'm serious. Yeah. I'm serious.
I know.
Like I asked Malone, I'll say this, like I gave Malone the out.
Yeah. Totally. Right?
I'm not trying to, when I say these things, what I'm trying to make clear is there are ways you can phrase a question in which you are just being purposefully antagonistic.
Right.
And
right.
I want to make this very clear. Fans want this. This is what I hear a lot is, why don't you guys ask the tough questions? If you ask a tough question, you are unlikely to get an insightful answer. Do you want something that's actually going to tell you what's going on? Because then you need to probably treat it, your interview subject, with a little bit of respect. Michael Malone's
great, great example of this was, I don't know if you saw Nick Engstedt, my partner on Locked On NBA, asked Jason Kidd about why hasn't Reggie Bullock played more? And he got, like, it was a pointed question, right? It was like, hey, why hasn't he played more minutes? And Jason Kidd took that with the tone that it was supposed to and basically said, like, I'm sorry, like, you thought he should have played. Like, it was a very defensive, yeah, non-insightful answer. Whereas if you said, like, how do you divvy up the minutes between your backcourt or something like that, you might get more of an insightful thing. So that's what you're saying in that, when you say you gave him an out, you're asking a question in a way that you're trying to get him to expound upon it.
Yeah, and here's a big key is Malone is smart enough. This is part of it, is Malone is smart enough to know if I ask him that question. So I asked him, I said, MPJ picks up a second foul and he goes to the bench. He looked a little frustrated. Was that because you were concerned about his foul trouble, or did you want a different look defensively? Which that's how I phrased it, to be like, or did you want to get him the fuck off the court so he stops struggling? Right. Yeah. He says, you know, it was foul trouble. Both he and Jokic both had two fouls. I didn't want to risk both of them ending up with three at the half and us being shorthanded for the second half, which I was like, okay. And then he paused and was like, and also he had a really terrible effort play on defense. He just didn't give any sort of effort in the paint. He just stood there and we can't have that. So like that's not me gotcha-ing Michael Malone. And he knows that because I gave him the opportunity to just like pass on by, right? He could have just been like, yep, just worried about the stuff, nothing to see there, move along. But he said like, no, like he was upset about it. So then MPJ doesn't come out with the rest of the team, by the way, for second half warmups until the very, very end. He's one of the last ones out of the locker room. Okay. Then they start the second half and the Nuggets ran literally, we counted four sets in a row with DHO handoffs, including like multiple re-DHOs.
Right.
To try and get him shots. And he winds up shooting and he misses almost all of them.
I felt like they were – going out of their way to try to get him shots early there, but in ways that didn't generate shots for him. Like, he ended up taking them, but they weren't like, oh, that was clean.
Yeah. There wasn't, and then, like, you know, because part of this is like the on ball stuff. When it's simple actions, like, they can generate shots for him, like coming off hard screens, like complicated stuff, but the simple actions don't necessarily generate it.
Right.
Then I'll say this, I thought Porter was bad tonight. I thought he made bad decisions. I thought that he continues to look like uncomfortable in 5-on-5 basketball, which is probably shouldn't be an issue again. They get the lead back to 1 in the third quarter, and Malone pulls him. And he didn't pull him because he was frustrated. It was just like
the rotation.
Substitution, you know? And what he tries to do is he tries to close the quarter. The Cavs are on the ropes. You can tell they're shook, right? The building's rocking. He brings in the effort crew, and little Facu Campazzo comes out to do his stuff that he does. And the entire thing falls apart. I will say this, he pulled MPJ too early. He has done it before where he plays the entire third quarter with the starters. This was a spot to play even on the first night of the back-to-back. That's not why he did it. Like, he thought that he could get away with it. He thought that the bench could come in, give them a boost, get them a small lead, and then the starters would close. And instead, he wound up starting the fourth quarter with an all-bench lineup, which you can't do. They got obliterated, and the game was over. And when the starters came in, they couldn't wrangle it, and they didn't play well either. So, that's your ball game, right? So I think that he pulled MPJ too early, given that MPJ had made a three, and there was momentum going, and you could tell the MPJ was, like, just starting to get going. Like, there was visible frustration from MPJ tonight. There was visible.
Yeah, oh, very much so. Last two games, honestly, that was their last game as well. They just won, and Jokic was brilliant. That was the story. Look, here's the thing. You'll get a lot of sweeping statements from people, you know, Michael Malone needs to do this, or Michael Porter needs to do this, or Jokic needs to do this. This is the problem the Nuggets have right now. This is the question they are being asked. The basketball gods are asking them right now, the riddle they have to solve. And that is just, how do we use this? How do we use Michael Porter's skill set? And Michael Porter, where do you fit into this equation? And I don't know where the balance of responsibility lies most heavily, but it's just what they have to figure out. I will say this. It's not my favorite riddle. I wish the Nuggets had other riddles that they were trying to solve right now that were more interesting, in part because I feel like this riddle has been one that's been in front of them for a while now. But, you know, unfortunately, it is one that we're just going to have to kind of sit through and hope they come to some kind of solution and figure something out here quickly.
I'll just say this. I don't think that Jokic and MPJ are going to build the same type of relationship that he and Jamal did. I don't think that those two are ever going to be amazing partners on court. I don't think they're ever going to be best of buds
and I wonder how much that second part matters.
I do too. I don't think it matters. I very rarely think it does, to be honest with you. I think you can be great work partners that don't hang out. And I think you can hang out well and not play well together.
Yeah.
Like, I think the best combinations are the ones that hit on both, right? Like, those are special combinations, but that's an unrealistic expectation. You can't expect two people to get along.
Yeah.
Like, you can expect them to be professional.
You need to. Well, I think I do. Here's what I'll say. Getting along is different. There has to be a mutual sort of respect and admiration. Yes. Like, I don't know if Steph Curry and Draymond Green are best friends off the court. Cause I don't know. I mean, you see them both separate with separate people a lot, but it's so clear. They both respect the hell out of each other. Yeah. Like that, there's no question about how much they respect each other.
And there's a love that's built by the adversity that they've gone through. And like that, I think Jokic and MPJ can actually develop, right? Like, you go through the hard times and that makes you closer. I don't think any of that necessarily, like, they can just play well together. They don't have the same idea. I don't want to short MPJ on this is part of the problem is like, there's things that it feels like he wants, but he's never said it, right? Like, he's not out there in the media being like, oh, I just need to get more shots. I don't know. Like, they've just, like,
is we all know he needs more shots. Like, Michael Porter's value is his shot making. And to be a great shot maker, you need to have shots. And he's not getting very many shots right now. So
how many shots?
He doesn't have to say it. We all see it. But
how many shots do you think he needs?
Again, but it's also the types of shots. I mean, a lot of the shots the 14 tonight weren't the ones that you're expecting. Kick out threes, cuts, you know, dribble handoffs that get him into a nice, you know, nice open threes, even if they're one dribble. Like, we know what it looks like for Michael Porter to sort of be in his comfort zone. He's not in his comfort zone. And I don't know if that's, and again, I'm not, it's hard to phrase this in a way that leaves it to where I'm not trying to put it on one person or on one thing, because I really don't know. This is a problem a lot of people have to solve together. But I didn't feel like tonight he was getting Michael Porter shots. And I don't feel like this year he's been getting Michael Porter shots.
Yeah, I'd also say that on some of these DHOs, MPJ could be attacking the rim and using the 6'10 size. And it just feels like every time he's just looking for a pull-up contested fadeaway. It just, that feels like what he wants.
Maybe that's what it is. I mean, maybe that's the problem, is that he doesn't have more in his bag. I don't think that's it, but it's certainly what's happening.
I don't think it's about that he doesn't have more in his bag. This is where I have a hard time, Adam. I really do, because I don't want to ascribe values to him when I don't know. Like, I haven't asked Michael Porter Jr. What kind of shots do you want?
Right.
Right.
It'd be a good question.
It's a good question. Haven't had a chance to ask it, and I don't want to ascribe that to it. I can't help but when I watch him, though, feel like he wants contested pull-up hezzies. That's what he wants. That's how I feel. You know, I'm open to being wrong, but that's just what I wind up. And there are times, look, I'll say this. There are times when very obviously he passes up shots trying to do the right thing because he's trying not to be that.
Oh, totally. I agree with that. Yep.
Like, there's tension there with him. There's the dark side pulls at him, but he's reaching for the light. Like, that's the whole thing. Right. And, you know, hey, Jamichael Green passed up an open three tonight after he missed a few. And passed it to Faka Campazzo. That should be a finable offense. Oh,
yeah, that I know the player you're talking about.
That should be a finable offense.
It is funny how the Nuggets are turning it over from bad decisions, but also from overpassing. Like, they're doing a little bit of everything. I mean, and this is what I mean. Like, just the connection on this team is off. But you know what? Here's the one thing I'll say. The connection for every team is off.
Yeah.
I mean, the Blazers lost by 30 tonight. 30.
To
that hasn't won yet.
Yeah, as somebody that covers the league and is watching all these games, and you've been watching them too, like, there is nobody that is without issues. Like, the Bulls tried to vomit on their own shirt tonight to get to 4-0.
Yeah.
Like, there is not a team that's sitting pretty right now. There's just not. There's not a single. The Timberwolves were off to this great start, got smacked by the Pelicans, who played them in one of those duplex sets where they played twice. They played both in Minnesota. And what was funny about that game was, because the Wolves are playing this new aggressive style, the Pelicans knew what they were going to do. Like, they just ran short roll kick out three over and over and over again. So, like, everybody's got issues. There's nobody except for the team that they play tomorrow who has no discernible issues and who you will talk about with David Locke after we come back from the break. I will not have a chance to tell you goodbye, so I will tell you this now. Thanks for joining us on Locked On Nuggets. We really appreciate it. Thanks for subscribing. Make sure to rate, review. Check us out on YouTube. We're on YouTube. It's amazing. Everyone really likes it. It's crazy. They like my energy. They like how handsome you are. It's a great combination. So make sure to subscribe to us on YouTube. Before we go to break, though, and get to David Locke talking about the Utah Jazz, I want to tell you a little bit about Bet Online. It's back and better than ever. They got a new web interface for the start of basketball season and more props, odds, and lines than ever before. It's your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. You sign up today using promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Basketball, football, baseball postseason, NHL, boxing, and UFC, all there. Don't wait to take advantage of the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. Bet Online, where the game starts. We're also brought to you by Rock Auto, which is awesome and incredible. And it has all these really great things that you can buy. You can just shop and get great parts. I've had a lot of car trouble in the last week, and I'm not going to lie, I've saved myself quite a bit of money by getting some parts off of Rock Auto. You get to save time and money because it's an easy-to-use catalog. You're going to find stuff fast. You don't have to go into the big box store and then wait in line and then go up to the counter and ask for something. Oh, it's not in stock, but at this other store, we can have it brought over here. And then you wind up paying even more money for it. Don't mess with that. Just order from Rock Auto. Save the time and money for yourself at rockauto.com. They're a family business. They've been serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. They got everything you need from brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. I need new carpet. Go explore their easy-to-use website today and find the solution for your auto parts needs. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How'd You Hear About Us box. They know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets with David Locke from Locked On Jazz.
Third segment crossover today with Locked On Nuggets, Adam Matas. I'm David Locke of Locked On Jazz.
I'm Adam Matas, Locked On Nuggets.
All right, let's talk about it. We are recording this before the Cavaliers game, but we are assuming that we'll have two undefeated teams playing each other, unless something crazy just happened. I heard your show today where you're like, we are the Nuggets, we do this. This is actually the signature of the Quinn Snyder era, is that we actually don't do that. Like, the Jazz actually beat below 500 teams with some regularity, so we'll see how that changes. All right, let's talk where the Nuggets are now. Obviously, without Jamal Murray, when I ran the numbers on you, the team still comes out great. I have them as really good. The question is the burden of playing 82 games without that crazy Canadian leading the way.
Right. That, no question about it. And the Nuggets, by a crazy start to the season, have two back-to-backs this week. They're all of their games come in bunches this week, and it starts with the road trip to Utah. So that'll be a storyline, I think, you know, for this game. But the major storyline for the Nuggets is that they're figuring out who they are in this new era. You're right that they have a lot of talent. I'm not surprised the numbers say they should be as good as they were last year, even without Murray in the regular season. But through two games, the storyline has been the Nuggets are still figuring out that Jokic is great. What's everybody else, and where do you fit in?
I listen to your show all the time. I think you and Matt are outstanding. You know that. You get a text message from me all the time saying, I love the show. I think this is really fascinating for both these two teams. They both come in with pretty significant playoff scars. They both are really good. They both have a legitimate chance to thinking they could win it this year. You need Murray probably to get healthy. I don't know what we need. And yet, what I'm most interested about, and this might be why these guys are professional athletes and why they're so special, is both teams seem to be mentally in a really good place when they both very easily could be in a mentally really bad place.
It's interesting. We talked before the season about how in this era of the NBA, you just have to keep buying a ticket to contention. And both the Jazz and Denver have been contenders now for the last two seasons, whatever degree of contender you want to qualify them as. And this is just another year. So I wonder if it's a little bit that, but I will tell you on Denver's side, this is the type of things you can easily overstate and overanalyze these types of things. Jokic wears sweatpants and t-shirts to the games, and he has for six seasons. It's just that's who he is. That's what the kind of guy is. The chip off of the Tim Duncan block. Showed up in a suit the other day, and when asked about it, he said, I'm a different man now. Kind of, I think, tongue-in-cheek. But I will say Jokic has been – it's been a maturation process and a business-like approach to him really starting last season, but it seems it's been ratcheted up this year. And that's the one thing about – Jokic is the team's floor raiser, and he's approached these first two games like a guy who's on a mission, not having fun out there. I'm out here to win. And that's why I think Denver's floor is just so high, including against teams like Utah.
So this is actually, I'd even go more similar, Adam. So to me, that made sense. I heard you guys talk about that. This was on Monday's show, and I thought it was a great conversation. It makes sense to me. And he was the best player in the world last year. Right. There's no way he thought, he could have said it when the year started, I think I can be the best player in the world. He couldn't have really believed it. But you know what? Last year, he was the best player in the world. And he's now walked around. So here's the other one. Rudy and Joe have that same feeling to them from the Olympics. Joe Ingles said getting the bronze medal for Australia, which was our old, you know, has just been this incredible relief. Rudy Gobert, the silver medal for France. I know they all want to win the gold, and he was devastated when they didn't. But they go in kind of knowing they're not winning the gold, right? The U.S. has got that one latched up pretty well. So there's a little bit of that game, I think, going on. Now, I don't know about Donovan and where he is, but he does seem, you know, hey, if Donovan's hit 6 of 12 off the bounce threes to start, so if he wants to just do that for the rest of the year, he's basically unstoppable like Jamal Murray was in the bubble. Right. So that'll work out. So, no, I do find these franchises, Rocky Mountain foes, have been on very parallel paths, and if we weren't somewhat rivals, we probably would just admire where each other are the whole time.
And when we did the Northwestern preview, this is you. So you brought up this buying a ticket to contention, just staying in the race. But the other thing you talked about was the narrative gets written from the outside about, oh, they collapsed against this team or couldn't get over the hump. I think both teams, the Nuggets and the Jazz, look at it and they go, hey, we had some injuries. We had some this luck or this matchup. But you know what? We're not afraid of it. We don't feel like we are a flawed team in any kind of way. Like with it, and I think the Nuggets feel this way where they're not like, oh, we got swept by Phoenix or we're not good enough for this. I think they know, hey, we're good. We just got to work at it and become the best version of ourselves. And I think that's why, from my perspective, certainly with the Nuggets, but I think both teams probably have more confidence than it appears on the outside because they just know they're good.
So how often have you heard them reference the Milwaukee Bucks? Because that is a phrase that I've heard out of our guys. I think the Bucks and their two playoff losses before winning it have given at least the Jazz kind of a model of hope.
It should. Yeah, it absolutely should, I think. And even, I mean, you look at even the last several years, Phoenix, you know, things broke right from. I think Denver's at the point where like, hey, we're good enough that we don't need that many things to break right. Every team needs one or two things to break right. They're in that category. But what's interesting about this one, you know, the Gobert-Jokic matchup is always interesting. I'm curious to see what Utah does and how they approach that matchup. In the regular season, they've tried different things out. Of course, last year, putting some, you know, Gobert off ball. In this one, I'm curious to see that matchup, but I'm more curious to see Jokic got a lot of help in the first game against the Phoenix Suns and Denver wins. He didn't really get any help in the second game against the San Antonio Spurs, but Jokic was good enough to beat the Spurs by himself in that fourth quarter. He's not good enough to beat the Jazz. So I'm curious to see if this is the first, or maybe we'll see what happens tonight with with the Cavs, but I'm curious to see where Michael Porter starts to find his footing, because I think to beat the Jazz, the Nuggets need big performances out of several guys, Will Barton, Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter, probably two out of three of those guys need to step up, and we just haven't seen it consistently yet.
By the way, I ran the Jokic numbers on Gobert. Nobody does this to Rudy. This is the testament to how great he is. Over so 1920 playoffs, 2021 season. He's 106 of 95 from the floor when guarded by Gobert, 54%. He's 30 of 59 from threes, 51%. That actually used to be the thing he couldn't do. He couldn't shoot the three over Gobert more than anything. By the way, I apologize for the computer dings on this segment. It's not Adam. It's me. My Microsoft Teams has decided to just go crazy today, right at this moment that we're recording this, and I have no idea how to quiet.
They might not be coming through because I don't hear them.
Good. Then I'm glad.
Can I make a comment real quick about the three?
Yeah.
Because I think there's something to that. The thing that has changed about Jokic over the last season and a half, he's quicker off of the drive. And I think because of that, you have to sag off. You used to be able to run out on him because he's so slow. If he blows by you, you recover. He's really gotten quick with his first step. I know that sounds funny because nobody thinks that Jokic is quick. He's quick attacking closeouts now in a way that I think makes defenders close out a little bit more shallow because they're afraid of being blown by.
Okay, so I know you play Cleveland tonight, and since I asked this question, he'll probably take 22 shots, and that's the adjustment. But Michael Porter Jr., only 10 shots in the Suns game, only 10 shots in the Spurs game, and not a great playoff. Like, not a bad playoff, but not a great playoff. What do you think – is that being the front page of a scouting report? What do you think is going on there with Michael Porter Jr. so far?
I think it's the most fascinating question around the Nuggets and will be the entire season. I think a lot of this has to do with the Nuggets are Jokic's team. You got to fit in around him. And Michael Porter should fit in around Jokic very well. He's an incredible catch and shoot, three-point shooter. He's great off of cuts. But I don't, for whatever reason, he just hasn't found shots within the flow of the offense. He's not getting to the spots where he should be getting open, reading the court here and there. So, yeah, the low field goal, it's not even, he's shooting a great percentage, I think, on the season, but he's not getting shots. He's not finding them. And the team certainly isn't going away from what they do well to find him shots. So that give and take, I don't know what the healthy balance is. We had a good debate about this on Locked On Nuggets yesterday. I think Porter can do a better job of learning the game to find shots within the Jokic system, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Nuggets need to kind of give him a little bit of, hey, we'll meet you halfway on this so that you feel a little bit more comfortable out there. But for this last game especially, just was not finding any shots in the offense.
So you talk about these two teams. I think most people, when they talk about it, they think Jamal Murray, Donovan Mitchell, they think Jokic, Gobert, they think offense. All four games have been played. So this is before the Cavaliers game. We'll see what happened tonight or last night by the time this airs. As of this moment, all opponents to the Jazz and the Nuggets have averaged less than a point of possession this year.
Crazy.
right? So the Denver, I mean, your two first games, the Suns and Spurs defensively are great. Yep. And Thunder aren't an NBA team, but the Kings are. And the Jazz defense against the Kings was unbelievable.
I think Kings are good. They're kind of my sleeper good team, surprise good team this year. Yeah, Denver has not allowed 100 points. I know that's a per-game number, but they haven't allowed it yet so far in the first two. We'll see what happens with Cleveland. But that's another area where I look at the Nuggets. We talked about this before the season. I said, I don't know if the Nuggets can be good defensively this year. It looks like not only can they be good, but so far, early return, small sample size, it looks like they actually, that's a strength. That's one of the things they do well. So they'll be very tested tonight with quick guards and Colin Sexton and maybe Garland if he plays. But they'll be especially tested on a back-to-back going against Donovan Mitchell. That's so pick and spread pick and rolls. Obviously, been Denver's kryptonite. They're going to get two teams that can really take advantage of that the Monday and Tuesday.
Jazz went to the playoffs. They got hit with their kryptonite, which was five wide. Rudy's out on the wing guarding. No one can guard the ball. They come downhill, and the Clippers win four straight against the Jazz. You know, wildly, right. Actually, the Kawhi injury helps them. Phoenix, the Nuggets kryptonite is Jokic in the pick and roll. And they run into Chris Paul and they get spread out. And Jokic, frankly, looks bad for locked parts of that series. Offensively, still great. Like, I'm all in. Like, don't misunderstand. Like, Rudy was not impactful. Like, two great players. It happens. What adjustments do you feel the Nuggets are making to that kryptonite? And then I'll let you take over if there's anything you want to add and ask about the Jazz.
Well, number one thing is having their backcourt playing. I know Murray's not there, but having PJ Dozier and Will Barton makes a huge difference. There is a defensive chemistry in the pick and roll that happens between a guard and a big, just the communication and the timing and rhythm of all of that. But I think more than anything, this is me. I mean, I'm always coming to the defense of Jokic. Just, I watch him every night. I think he's still, in many ways, underrated for what he does. I think he's just more rested. I think he ran out of steam in that series. And even against Phoenix in game number one, you just saw a much more active Jokic. You really saw it against the Spurs. I think he had five stocks or two blocks or a block and three steals, something like that. He's just been very, very active and mobile on the defensive end, not necessarily in a quickness, but just there's no attrition. He's just the fourth quarter. He looks like he does in the first quarter where he's light on his feet and he's playing at 100% the entire game. I think that's the biggest difference for him.
Anything you need to know about the Jazz before we wrap this baby up?
I'm curious the X factor. I'm curious if there's an – I mean, this Jazz team is kind of the same. We know Donovan Mitchell. We know Rudy Gobert. Is there a guy that's been a little bit surprising so far in the early go that might make a different wrinkle?
No, the only wrinkle – Rudy Gay, I think, will have an impact. Like, that's the piece that the front office really believes alters who they are. He's really quite big. I've been surprised at his size just being around him. He's also 35, so we'll see. Coming off a foot injury, let's not be naive about that. Jared Butler was very good in preseason, but I'm just not a big – you know, I know fans love that, but right. I'm not a big believer that has an impact. Here's the subtle little thing that I think's different about this team this year, and might be overplaying this because there's just not that many things that different. Mike Conley chose to be here.
Right, yeah.
Right? He got traded here. He adjusted. Yeah. He took the – and then he figured it out. And talking to him, he said, I just realized how much I'd be missing if I went somewhere else. And so I just think there's a little deeper buy – not – it's a very tricky wording, right? Because if I say there's deeper buy-in, it implies there was less buy-in before. I'm not saying that at all. But there's just – there's no doubt he's here. He's probably ending his career here, right? Or at least feels that way. Like, I just think there's a little bit – like, probably Aaron Gordon feels that way a little bit this year. He just signed for – he's really here now. And right. So I think there's a little bit of that that's going on, and that's been evident a little bit in training camp and practice and things of that nature.
The other quick hitter I would have for you is just the bench. How has the Jazz bench look? Denver, that's a huge up and down for Denver.
So Whiteside's replacing Favors, who did not have a particularly good year. He was great against Sacramento. Rudy Gobert was -9, and we won a game, and the Jazz won a game, which I think Dan Clayton had a note that four times last year Rudy was negative and the Jazz actually won a game.
He should grab a rebound per minute when he plays against Denver. Denver's really small. He might be stretched out on defense, but he should rebound a lot.
He's not a great second movement guy. Now, Gobert's the best second movement guy, multiple action guy in the NBA. So that's a hard one. You know, you never look good when you go up to that. And then Eric Paschal's playing in what was George Niang's minutes, which will be Rudy Gay's minutes right now. We'll see. He had a three the other night. You know, actually, the comp on him is I think he should be building his career to try to be Jay Crowder. So, like, an unabashed shooter at a low percentage that creates gravity by just being such a gunner that people guard it. He's pretty good with the ball in his hands. He's 6'6". He's huge, like big. He's actually moves pretty well laterally. So he could play, if you went small, in theory, he could play the five and you could switch one through five if you had to.
I liked Niang. I was a Niang guy.
I did too. He looked really bad in the playoffs, but I love him. Okay, and he's one of my favorite guys in the Draymond Green talks about those players, right? There is a real difference between those guys that can play against, you know, that maybe prosper against. There is when you're playing the four best teams in the league.
Yeah.
Or there's a little bit different athletic ability you might need to need. George Niang, I'm a big fan. He'll be great in Philly. He is unquestionably the most my favorite player I've ever covered in my entire life.
I think there might be – there's 82-game players, 16-game players, and I think there might be like 8-game players, which is the conference finals, because that there's almost a different level when you get there and another group falls off.
All right, we got to wrap it up because otherwise this guy texts that shows are too long. I'll always appreciate your time. You and I can talk NBA forever. We should just find 2 days off when both teams are off and just do conversations like that last one. I'm cutting it off because, yes, everybody, that would have been interesting, but we would have been here for another hour. He's Adam Manas. He's Locked On Nuggets. I'm Locked On Jazz. Have a great one. Thanks for tuning in to Locked On Podcast Network and making us your first listen of the day. For your second listen, go to Locked On NBA, the daily podcast, 30 minutes every day, running through all the night's action. You can't get it anywhere else. Go to Locked On NBA for your second listen today.